is the angry GM. I am not reading off of a script, and this is absolutely the first time I am attempting to record this. If I sound a little different this week, it's for two reasons. First of all, I'm doing the audio remastering myself. This is not something that hasn't happened before. Normally, Rattercrash volunteers. He's a member of the community, and he volunteers to do the audio remastering, and he's why my previous audio recordings always sound so good. The reason this one sounds like crap is because he's not doing this one, I am, and that's because I have also completely firebombed and rebuilt my entire computer setup and my office. Not literally, but anyway. So everything is different, and yet I'm hoping that by the time this goes live, nothing is different. Which, by the way, when this goes live, if it goes live even within a couple of days of today when I'm recording it, you can check your calendar, but that means that I am super close to being actually on time and delivering content weekly instead of delivering a month of content in 3 days at the end of every month. So there's that. Finally, before I start reading, one important point of business that has to be covered, Roimamen. Now, moving on. When do you stop narrating? Let's keep it simple today, guys. I almost said let's keep it brief, but you and I both know that would be a load of bullshit. So, what's simple? Simple is nice, standalone game mastering advice useful for any idiot of any skill level, from novice idiot all the way up to paid and professional idiot who is running any kind of game at all. Of course, I will be focusing on a specific flavor of fantasy adventure role-playing gaming. You know the one I mean. It's the one the vast majority of my readers are still running despite what a screaming minority keeps trying to tell me. Don't worry, guys. I gotcha. Like all my classic angry game mastering advice for everyone features, trademark, this one's based on a common theme I've spotted across a bunch of interactions I've had recently and chats I've seen in various dark and dingy corners of the virtual gamer space. I can sum the theme up thus. When do you stop narrating? When do you stop narrating is not a question sane people ask. At least, they don't ask it that way. But they do ask it, if you listen. In classic angry fashion, I'm recognizing the real question underlying a whole bunch of questions like, what do I do when my players want their characters to spend hours exploring a town or gathering rumors? Or, when the players are traveling, do I have to describe, like, every hour of travel? Or tracking. How the hell do I do tracking? Like, actually at the table do it. There are a couple of common threads in those and other questions. First, they're to do with actions that eat up a lot of game time, but not necessarily a lot of play time. That is, the act of traveling, tracking, or exploring fills hours or days of actual time in the game world, but rarely needs more than a few brief interactions at the table to iron out. Second, those actions don't involve a lot of significant, meaningful decisions. Traveling and tracking are just plodding along and looking at the ground. There's nothing the players have to decide once they start walking, unless, of course, trouble brews. Meanwhile, exploring and rumor-mongering do involve a lot of little decisions, like should I turn down this street or head off in that direction, or should I greet this person or that person, and should I say good morrow or how's it going, governor, or whatever. Meanwhile, exploring and rumor-mongering involve lots of little decisions, but none of them are meaningful or affect the outcome, and most are the sorts of things that in real life we just kind of let happen. The decisions aren't impactful, strategic, or revelatory. Of course, such actions may require several die rolls to resolve them, and despite what you or anyone says, or what you incorrectly think I once said, there are many good reasons to use multiple die rolls to resolve some of those protracted actions. But the die rolls represent the character's ongoing work on a task they've already made all the relevant decisions about. Thirdly and lastly, the outcomes of these actions can be completely and totally described in summary form. After 3 days of painfully, scratchily forcing yourself through Tanglethorn Forest, you emerge. Or they can be described with a single highlighted event that happens somewhere in the middle of doing the thing. While you're at the fountain where the village goodwives are gathering water for their household's needs, you overhear several of them gossiping about whatever. Few role-playing games handle these sorts of protracted tasks well. Most don't handle them at all. Worse, because modern gaming has become about acting out every single damned spoken word and moment of activity, however small and useless, because dumbass players have become convinced, not by Critical Role, don't even start that shit here, because role-playing gamers are about putting on a show with their dumbass author insert fanfic Mary Sue Fursona original character recolors, do not stick. Sorry. Worse, because many gamers think that proper role-playing means acting out every single spoken word and moment of activity, however small and useless, most game masters don't handle protracted tasks well either. That's a big part of why so many gamers struggle with modes of play like Wilderness Travel and Town Mode. Honestly, I myself am part of the problem. In teaching all y'all how to narrate good, you're welcome, by the way, I inadvertently also failed to teach you when and how to stop narrating. Fortunately, it ain't hard to fix this. You just need to learn one simple idea. Well, actually, there's a bunch of different ideas wrapped up in everything I said above, but I doubt anyone wants a full and updated and streamlined re-examination of how to adjudicate Wilderness Travel or a structure for town-based activities, so we'll just stick with this idea I've chosen to call tab-stop narration. Over the years, I've taught y'all that there's this whole checklisty procedure thing underlying good narration, right? First you set the scene, then you invite a player to act, then describe the action's outcome, then invite a player to act again. You go around like that a bunch of times until something's done, and then you transition to some new encounter or event or whatever. Set the scene again, and away you go. Remember that shit? Of course you do. It's an absolutely brilliantly useful and functional way to break down game mastering narration, and I'd be saying that even if I weren't the one who came up with it. Which I was. That brilliance? All me, baby. You're welcome. By breaking it down, I divided narration into four elements. Four skills you could practice and learn and master separately. Set the scene, invite a player to act, describe the outcomes, transition. But let's look at narration differently today. Those steps aren't really steps at all. They don't come out as separate, distinct chunks of narration. I mean, I know they do for some of y'all, but I'm saying they shouldn't. Narration should come out of your face hole in a giant blob of words with all those components worked in naturally. Thus, during combat, I might deliver this blob of narration. Ardric's slash opens a wound across the ogre's bare stomach. It howls in pain, flailing its fists and its club wildly. Cabe takes a blow to the head that leaves his vision blurred and his head ringing. That's 6 points of bludgeoning damage, Chris. And leaves him trying to clear his head while the ogre's wound sprays blood everywhere. Before Ardric can press the advantage, however, Dene, standing just outside the engagement, does what? Danielle, it's your turn. So my narration isn't just Ardric hits and hurts the ogre attacks, Cabe takes damage, Danielle, what does Danae do? It's not just me working through the steps. Instead, it's a delicious soup I've woven from the different threads that represent the elements of narration. Because good narration is like a soup made out of thread. Remember that. Narration isn't a step-by-step process. That kind of thinking leads to disjointed, bullet-pointy narration. And it's also what tricks you into trying to do everything in that moment-by-moment where every last action must be described style. The truth is, running a role-playing game is more like running a text-based adventure game. Some player types in some input, you parse it, and then you spit out all the text you need to spit out until it's time for the player to provide input again. Each wall of text may set scenes, provide transitions, describe outcomes, and all that other shit, but those are just the rules for what the text must contain. Actually playing the game is just typing actions and receiving blobs of text. That, by the way, is why people think Grok and ChatGPT can run, or worse, design, role-playing game adventures. They can't. And if you ask them the right way, they'll even tell you exactly why they can't and shouldn't. The point is that narration isn't a step-by-step thing. Rather, it's responding to the player's inputs with a wall of text that has certain elements in it. I know I'm going to get a lot of shit for saying this, but it's like telling a story and pausing only when you need the players to give input. Now, before some of you get your panties in a jimmy, that's just an analogy. I'm not literally saying that the Game Master tells a story and just invites the players to press a few choose-your-own-adventure. You know what? Screw it. A bunch of ass clowns are going to scream at me no matter how I explain it because they'd much rather intentionally misunderstand me and fight about how much smarter they are than actually listen and risk being less shit at running games. I really don't understand why people who think I'm the worst thing to happen to role-playing gaming show up to intentionally read my 20,000 words every month in the most uncharitable, incorrect, and infuriating way possible, but that's on them. I'm sure they'll forgive me for ignoring their verbal diarrhea. Anyway, tab stops. But first, a sidebar. Why AI can't Game Master? Lots of folks, including a few publishers who really should know better, have worked themselves into a frothing frenzy of excitement over the idea of using large language model-based generative artificial intelligence models, like ChatGPT and Grok, to replace Game Masters and adventure writers. Some absolutely insane dumbasses are even using AI to replace players so they can run games for their robot buddy, and what the mother-loving fuck is that about? What even is the point? I'm not going to pretend I haven't tested Skynet's ability to write and run games myself, and you know what? I ain't worried I'm going to lose my job. In fact, I kind of hope everyone else starts using ChatGPT to write all their content. That'll leave me as the only person in the entire community who's not publishing utter and complete crap, and the only Game Master left who can run an actually good game. At the same time, I'm not a Luddite. I'm not saying this because I hate AI. I've started using LLM-based generative AI tools in my workflow. Not to write content, never to write content. I don't even trust it to proofread my work, because I would never pass off a robot's output as my own work, and because I care about actual quality. But it is a useful tool for a small business owner and content creator to have. Hating AI ain't gonna get you anywhere. That's like hating search engines or refusing to use a smartphone. All it does is put you behind the curve. But there are dangers in overusing AI, using it badly, using it for the wrong reasons, or using it in ways it can't be used, just like there are dangers in using Wikipedia for all your research or banging screws in with a hammer. If you want to have some quirky fun and kill a couple of hours, by all means, ask the Grok to run a game for you. It's kind of fun for a diversion, and contrary to popular belief, I don't hate fun. But understand that AI has specific defined limitations that do make it an absolutely terrible game master and adventure designer. Context drift and semantic drift lead to inconsistencies as the interaction goes on, and consistency is one of those things a role-playing game absolutely must have. Large language model-based AIs also don't technically have memories. They remember only chunks of summary information, and when they forget a detail, they don't know they've forgotten it, and they fill in the gaps with default behavior. They also don't know they don't know things and won't go digging for information if they think they know it, kind of. This often leads to so-called creative hallucinations. Moreover, AI doesn't have an internal model for the game's systems or its world like human brains do, so they struggle to enforce the rules properly and maintain world details across long interactions. Even if you train a model using the entire core rulebook for your game of choice, it can't use its judgment to apply the rules and often has to be reminded to invoke specific rules at specific times. AI has no sense of authorial or design intent. They can't keep things like themes, tone, vision, or design concepts like progression and setup and callback in their heads, and so can't engage in any kind of top-down approach to design. They can only run and-then-style games because that's how they generate their outputs. And because each output becomes part of the context for the next, all of the problems I've highlighted above get worse with each interaction. The longer the game goes on, the more bonkers the AI gets, which is why those drift problems happen. It's also why AI struggles with iterative and bulk tasks, like generating 50 NPCs to populate a town, and gets stuck in repetitive patterns or outputs crazier results the longer the list is, or just loses count and stops at 27 thinking it's done. So, yeah, my job is safe. Hell, the more people use AI wrong for the wrong things, the safer it gets, so please, all of you, try to replace me with a robot. I fully support that idea. Anyway, tab stop narration. Let's explore another batshit insane analogy I pulled out of my ass. Let's compare narration to tab stops. What are they? Well, you know how when you're entering information in an online form or fillable PDF, pressing tab will instantly take you to the next place where you're allowed to type? Unless, of course, it's an official D&D character sheet distributed by Wizards of the Coast themselves, because those fuckwits let an official fillable PDF character sheet sit on their site for years that had absolutely insane tab stops set. Like, seriously, how do you F up moving to the next field? Anyway, those are tab stops. It doesn't matter how far in the document or form the next input box is, pressing tab will get you there. It'll zip you through pages and pages of documents if it has to. That's narration. That's tab stop narration. In theory. In theory, for now anyway, I'm going to change the rules below. In theory, if your players say they want to walk the 200-mile road between Bungusville and Castle Frazzledazzle, I misspelled Frazzledazzle, and I'm the sort of only sort of person who would notice that, but yeah. If your players say they want to walk the 200-mile road between Bungusville and Castle Frazzledazzle, and the weather's fine, and there are no encounters on the road, and nothing weird to see, your next line of narration should summarize 9 days of road travel and end with the players approaching the castle gates. There's really no reason to break up the travel. The characters are going to travel during the day, camp at night, keep reasonable watch rotations, stay alert, eat when they're hungry, drink when they're thirsty, and follow the road. Thus, once my players declare their intention to travel, I need to gather all the information I need to cover all the action up to the next moment they will have something interesting and useful and meaningful to decide. If I think shit like watch rotations are important, I'll ask, are you going to camp at night? Will you set a watch? Who takes what shift? I only have to ask that shit one time because unless there's a compelling reason to change it up, the players aren't going to. And anything that would cause a compelling reason to change watch rotations is probably going to need a tab stop anyway. Which is something I also determine before I start talking. I ask the questions I need to ask, I make notes, I compute the track and check my map for planned encounters, I roll for random encounters, and all of that tells me when my next tab stop is. If I discover there's a random encounter on the fourth day, that's my next tab stop. If absolutely nothing happens, my next tab stop is at the destination. Let's say I did a bunch of rolls and discovered that there is, indeed, an encounter on the fourth day. I might do this. You leave Bungusville and follow the dusty castle road east. Within a few hours, you've left the village and farms behind and find yourself surrounded by gently rolling grass and scrubland. The road dwindles to a pair of deep-worn cart ruts winding through the ankle-high growth. You travel for days, the scene much the same, day after day. Mark off 3 days of rations, please. Until mid-afternoon on the fourth day. That's when you find yourselves, see, tab stops. Now, if you were paying attention, you probably noticed my careful use of the phrase, in theory, prefacing all the shit I said above. In theory, once the players give you the input you need, you can narrate and narrate and narrate until the game hits a point where you need more input. In practice, though, there are some reasons to stop narrating before you need input, or rather, to pause your narration until the players tell you it's okay to keep going. A lot of this shit is going to separate the mere game executors from the true game masters among you, but don't sweat that. Just use the parts that suit your level of skill and investment. The problem with narrating over huge swaths of time and distance is that it utterly fails to convey any actual sense of time and distance. If you cover a month of travel with a few sentences of narration, your players are going to start to feel like they're just clicking on a fast travel option. Of course, you could prevent that by forcing a bunch of encounters and random bullshit into every trek or trip to the marketplace, but you shouldn't have to do that, and you don't. It should be entirely possible for the players to hike long distances on safe roads, totally unmolested, or relax as passengers on a ship for a month's voyage along a safe trade route. For long tasks and long periods of uneventful travel, you should insert a few narrative pauses. They aren't real tab stops per se. They're more like stopping the narration and saying, press X to continue. Which, yeah, I said you shouldn't ever do that, but that was in the context of adjudicating actions. Narration and pacing are different. Besides, we're getting into advanced skills here, so all bets are off. What's this look like in practice? Well, for a long travel trip, I might describe the first day of travel and then describe the act of camping the first night. I'll ask everyone to mark off a day of rations, confirm the watch rotation, tell everyone to apply a long rest, talk about the uneventful night, and then say, if there's nothing else to do before you break camp, okay, you break camp and continue on your way. I'll then carry on to the next tab stop, or if the trip's really long, insert another little pause like that a few days later. Maybe that'll be a midday break by a stream to rest, eat, and refresh the mounts, or some shit like that. Those sorts of pauses are more about pacing than inviting action. You have to understand that and adjust your expectations accordingly. Don't invite the players to act, just ask them to confirm the decisions they've already made, give them a little bookkeeping, give them some space to act if they want to, then move on. Pauses like these shouldn't take but a moment. They just exist to make the trip or task seem as long as it is, and to give the players a chance to act if they want to. See, those little pauses are great for giving the players space to interact with each other or stay in their characters' headspaces. They don't force the players to act or even invite it. They give the players permission to interact if they want to. Another thing these pauses do is break up the bookkeeping. There is technically nothing wrong with asking the players to mark off 10 days of rations at the end of a long trip. You absolutely do not have to balance the books every day, and you shouldn't. But, well, players are fuck-ups. They misjudge their resources, they forget to buy supplies, and they mismanage them. Besides, players can't know for sure how long any trip is going to take. But that's down to adjudicating travel better, which I ain't talking about today. The point is, breaking up the resource bookkeeping gives the players a chance to spot a supply crunch coming before it's a crisis. For this reason, true game masters actually always have a rough idea of how long the party's supplies will carry them. You don't need an exact number, just a general idea of how many days the party can go before they hit an emergency. Then, true game masters start inserting pauses for regular bookkeeping to give the players a chance to see the emergency coming. It's on the players to spot the emergency.
Guys, how much longer is this trip? Because I forgot to buy food and I've only got a couple of days worth left.
But if you cover 2 weeks of travel with narration when the party only had 8 days of food to begin with, you didn't give them the chance to see the issue coming. That's why mere game executors do day-to-day bookkeeping. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just not ideal if you can avoid it. It chews up game time doing paperwork instead of playing the game. It's better if you can do all the resolution before the trip starts and all the bookkeeping when it ends. Even though it'll take a little extra time at the start of the trip or any protracted task, the actual narration is smoother. It does require you to know when to give the players space to play the push-your-luck game or to see a problem coming. Everything I've said about food and travel supplies also counts for materials and protracted crafting tasks, medical supplies when administering long-term care, money when carousing or networking, and all other costs of continuing protracted tasks. Sidebar. Round by round initiative. Interestingly, a lot of the shit I'm saying about proper pacing, tracking, and bookkeeping when it comes to protracted tasks also applies to rounds of combat, though the issues are a little different. With each edition published over the last quarter century, D&D has shifted a little more from round by round combat to continuous cyclical combat. In fact, at this point, the rules don't even need to refer to rounds at all. That time unit is entirely vestigial. But the flow of combat has actually lost a few things by not having an inbuilt pause at the top of each combat round. Honestly, I'd call it one of the several major weaknesses in modern D&D Initiative, and if you're really good, I'll talk more about that and how to fix it in the future. Before I wrap up, I want to point out that while pauses are great for conveying a proper sense of pacing and giving the players space to interact in the dead time during long, boring tasks, and to keep the players aware of the bookkeeping without breaking up the action too much, pauses ain't for die rolling. Pauses are for pacing and player brains. Either you pause between tab stops to convey a sense of time, distance, or scene, or you pause to give the players space, Or you pause to give the players, Either you pause between tab stops to convey a sense of time, distance, or scene, or you pause to give the players space to think and act. You don't pause if all you need are some dice rolls. Obviously, this goes for shit like random event checks. I already told you to get them out of the way at the start of the trip because they help you set the tab stops. But it also goes for ongoing checks the players might need to make to resolve an ongoing action. Depending on your system du jour, you might need to make periodic checks for tracking, navigation, crafting, foraging, whatever. That's fine. Do what the rules tell you to do. But don't take that to mean you have to roll the checks as they come, nor do you have to let the players roll their own checks. Just as you can pre-roll random event checks to determine when the next tab stop happens, you can also pre-roll tracking checks and navigation checks and crafting checks until you hit a failure or the next tab stop. The key here is to resolve the entire action before narrating anything and use that resolution to decide how to narrate what. If you know the party's lost on day 3, you slow down the narration at that point and start going day by day so the party can watch their supplies dwindle and wonder if they really shouldn't have arrived already. If you know the crafter blows his third day of work and ruins a bunch of supplies, that's a tab stop because the crafter might want to cut his losses or buy more supplies before he continues. There you have it. A nice, simple way to handle protracted game actions that chew up a lot of fictional fantasy hours, but don't entail a lot of meaningful, impactful decisions at the table, and thus absolutely don't deserve playing round by round, or minute by minute, or even day by day. When you recognize the players have undertaken such a task, since you know what to look for now, don't just grab some dice and start talking. Stop instead and think about how much gameplay the player's choice of action covers. Think about the next time you're going to need them to make a useful, meaningful decision. When's the next time the characters will be at a point where they're waiting for their brains to decide what they do next? Now, ask yourself what you need to know to get the game to that point. If you don't know when that point even is, figure it out. If you need dice to tell you, roll them. Now, roll all the dice you need to know to get to that next point of player input. Ask the players for any information you need to get to that point, too. Ask right now. Take a minute. Take five. It's fine. Tell the players to give you a minute to do your thing. They'll wait. Do not let the players take a break every time you have to do this shit, by the way. That'll be a disaster. While you're doing this, consider the action from the player's side of the screen. Is there anything they need to see coming? Is there anything that might give them pause in the middle of a task? Anything that might make them think about changing their plans? If so, build pauses into the action before that point. Or you can make the choice to resolve things day by day, hour by hour, or segment by segment if you think that's best. If you think the players need a lot of chances to spot a disaster coming, or if the challenge you're building is a push-your-luck kind of thing, that might be best. Remember, the goal is to skip the moment-by-moment gameplay whenever the game's action doesn't demand or deserve it. That's just smart, efficient game mastering. But you don't want to hurt the gameplay experience for the sake of good, efficient pacing. On that note, by the way, consider working in an early pause or some periodic pauses so the players can feel like their characters are putting in a lot of time or covering a lot of difference or doing something tediously, repetitively dull for minutes or hours or days. Once you've worked all that shit out in your head, once you've resolved the whole action and decided how you're going to narrate the whole outcome, only then do you open your gob and let your narrative soup spill forth all over the table. Narrative soup that is full of scene setting and transitional yarn. Because if you remember nothing else of what I've taught you today, you must remember this. Delivering good game mastering narration is like puking a soup made of yarn onto your game table. That's the real takeaway.